Welcome to Time Travelling Team, the weekly podcast where we review every episode of Doctor Who right from the very beginning. I'm Trisha.
And I'm Patty. This week, we join the Doctor and the Santigan as they're drawn back to Earth and come face to face with an old friend, an enemy who wants to drain the Doctor's regenerations, and an ally in Modern Undead. As usual, we'll be discussing the Doctor, the companions, and the villains, and give you our thoughts on the story as a whole.
We would also love to hear your thoughts on this story, as with any other story that we do. So to join the discussion, you can check us out at Time Teamp, that is T-I-M-E-T-E-A-M-P on Facebook, X, or Instagram, or you can email us at timetravellingteamp@teampproductions.com. Now, Patty, as per usual, would you please take us on a trip down memory lane with our story summary?
I will indeed. Part 1. At an English boarding school, the students go about their daily routines. One of them, Thurlow, and his companion, Hippo Ibbotson, examine a vintage 1920s roadster belonging to one of the staff. Thurlow dares Hippo to come with him on a joyride, but Hippo is reluctant, fearing that they will get caught. However, Thurlow forces him in and takes off down the road, encouraged by the cheers of their fellow students. Despite Hippo's protests, Thurlow leaves the school grounds and takes off down one of the country roads at high speed. However, they encounter another car on the narrow country road and are forced off into a nearby field. Thurlow passes out, but wakes up a short while later in a strange vortex overlooking his prone body, which is being attended to by school staff and the police that are also there looking after a dazed Hippo. Suddenly, a dark-robed figure appears beside Thurlow and introduces himself as a guardian who has his best interests at heart. The figure, who unbeknownst to Thurlow is actually the Black Guardian, says that he isn't dead, but Thurlow says that he wishes he was, as he can no longer stand living on Earth. The Black Guardian says that he will help Thurlow leave Earth, but he must first do something for him. He tells him that he needs his help to kill one of the most evil creatures in the universe, the Doctor. Thurlow is reluctant to do so, but agrees when faced with the prospect of having to remain on Earth forever. Meanwhile, back at the car crash site, the school doctor and headmaster attend to the unconscious Thurlow. They are joined by the owner of the car, the Doctor's old ally, the Brigadier, who comments that he has never encountered something as destructive as the English schoolboy. Suddenly, Thurlow wakes up in a panic, but the Brigadier reassures him that he is all right. On the TARDIS, Tegan asks the Doctor if she is finally free of the Mara, saying that she is still suffering bad dreams. The Doctor reassures her that it is her mind's way of coping with the trauma that she experienced. He explains that the only way for the Mara to be fully destroyed was when it was crossing over from the void into the physical world, but it is now gone forever. Nyssa joins them as Tegan asks to be taken to Earth so she can be surrounded by something familiar to help her recover. Suddenly, the TARDIS momentarily powers down, throwing them to the floor. The Doctor goes to the console and says that they have encountered a warp ellipse cutout, which can only occur in the orbit of something and a fixed point in both space and time. Nyssa says the odds of that are nearly impossible. Tegan asks if the ship has broken down again, and Nyssa asks if they are okay. The Doctor says that it looks like something is on a collision course with the TARDIS and turns on the external view screen. He and Tegan then begin to argue when he fails to confirm if they are safe or not, but they are interrupted by Nyssa, who points to the screen which shows a large starship coming right for them. The Doctor goes back to the console and manages to dematerialise in time before rematerialising somewhere on the starship. They exit the TARDIS and take a look around and find themselves in a series of opulent rooms with no sign of any crew or passengers. They find the bridge, and according to the flight records, the ship has been travelling for over 3,000 years. Nyssa spots a transmat platform, and the Doctor says the records indicate that it was last used 6 years before their arrival, with its destination being Earth. He then says that they should go back to the TARDIS. Back at the boarding school, Thurlow is in the infirmary and told to go back into bed by the nurse. On his nightstand, he sees a strange crystal and asks where it came from. The nurse says that it was in his pocket, but before she can say more, they are joined by the headmaster, who berates Thurlow for his antics as well as his other poor attitude in school. However, Thurlow tries to shift the blame onto Hippo, saying that he was the one driving and that he went along to make sure that Hippo didn't get hurt. Before the headmaster can ask him any more, the nurse says that Thurlow needs to get rest and he leaves. Once he is alone, Thurlow examines the crystal, which starts to glow, and the Black Guardian's voice appears in his head, telling Thurlow that he will be with him until his task is completed. He says that the TARDIS will soon arrive and that he will get his chance to kill the Doctor. He orders him to go to the obelisk on the top of a nearby hill and wait for further instructions. Elsewhere, the Brigadier approaches the headmaster's office and meets Hippo as he comes out, having been dressed down by the headmaster. Hippo apologizes to the Brigadier before leaving. The headmaster comes out and the Brigadier expresses his belief that Thurlow was the one really responsible for the joyride, saying that he is a sly individual. He asks if they have contacted his parents, but the headmaster reveals that Thurlow is an orphan, who is looked after by his parents' solicitor. At that moment, Hippo goes to see Thurlow in the infirmary, who says that he has taken sole responsibility for the situation. He jokes that Hippo will still be beaten as punishment before taking the crystal and leaving, forcing a confused and frightened Hippo to follow him. They arrive at the obelisk, and Thurlow hears the Black Guardian's voice, which tells him to press a part of a nearby urn. He does so, and it reveals a camouflage transmat platform. Thurlow goes into it and it vanishes, causing Hippo to flee in terror. Thurlow lands on the starship and goes to the bridge, but the Black Guardian says that he must carry out his task. Thurlow tries to throw away the crystal, but it becomes stuck to his hand. The Black Guardian then appears and orders Thurlow to find the Doctor and kill him. He makes his way to the room with the TARDIS, but he is forced to take cover when the Doctor comes running out of it, followed by Nyssa and Deegan. He leads them back to the bridge and says that the transmat beam is interfering with the TARDIS, preventing them from taking off. The Doctor wonders what the transmat pod was doing on Earth for the last 6 years and rushes back to the TARDIS, not hearing Tegan's warnings that someone might be there already. This proves to be true when he encounters Thurlow examining the console. Thurlow introduces himself to the Doctor, who in turn introduces him to Nyssa and Tegan when they arrive. The Doctor says that he will use the transmat to go back to Earth to sever the beam connecting it to the ship and thereby free up the TARDIS so Nyssa can pilot it down to collect him. Thurlow asks to join him and the Doctor agrees. After they leave, Tegan voices her mistrust of Thurlow, saying that no one just accidentally walks into a transmat pod like Thurlow claimed to have done. However, Nyssa points out that Tegan did the exact same with the TARDIS when she first encountered the Doctor. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Thurlow arrive back on Earth, and the Doctor finds the urn which is the source of the transmat beam. He starts to work on disconnecting it, but as he does so, he fails to notice Thurlow pick up a rock at the Black Guardian's urging in order to crush his skull. Part 2. Before Thurlow can strike, the Doctor finishes tinkering with the transmat beam, but it unexpectedly blows up, causing him and Thurlow to fall to the ground, who also drops the rock in the process. They briefly see the TARDIS appear, but it suddenly disappears again, causing the Doctor to wonder where it went. Nyssa and Tegan are just as confused when they use the external viewscreen to check their surroundings, and they see the obelisk, but no sign of the Doctor or Thurlow. They go outside to take a look for him, but there is no sign of him. Meanwhile, Thurlow wanders away from the Doctor as he examines the remains of the transmat beam, and he asks the Black Guardian for further instructions. However, he is interrupted by the arrival of the Brigadier and Hippo, who had run back to the school for help after Thurlow's disappearance. The Brigadier asks why he isn't in the infirmary, and Thurlow says that he was with the Doctor. The Doctor looks up and enthusiastically greets the Brigadier with his full name and lets him know who he is, but the Brigadier says that they have never met before. He then says he has to get the two boys back to the school, and the Doctor follows on after them. Meanwhile, Tegan and Nyssa wonder where the Doctor has gone. Tegan suggests that the transmat pod malfunctioned and took him somewhere else. Suddenly the pod reappears and they go to investigate it. They go inside and they see a badly burnt body in tattered clothing lying on the ground. Thinking it is the Doctor, they rush to his aid. The man asks where he is and they tell him that he is back on Earth. When they mention the TARDIS, he asks them to bring him into it. They bring him to the console room and Tegan tells Nyssa to go get him some blankets while she tends to him. When Nyssa comes back, she mentions Thurlow and Tegan goes back to the pod to try and find him. She returns a short while later and says that there is no sign of him, and Nyssa says that he could have been atomized. Back at the school, the Doctor apologizes to the Brigadier for not realizing he didn't recognize him due to having recently regenerated. However, the Brigadier says he still doesn't know him or anything about the TARDIS. However, he is shocked when the Doctor mentions UNIT and says that it is a top secret organization. The Doctor asks to speak in private and the Brigadier takes him to his personal residence on the school grounds. Once there, the Doctor again tries to get the Brigadier to remember him, saying that his apparent memory loss and the disappearance of the TARDIS must be connected. He asks him about Sergeant Benton and his old companion Harry Sullivan, and the Brigadier tells him about their current statuses. However, when the Doctor mentions his older companions Joe, Sarah Jane and Liz, the Brigadier suddenly goes into a daze as his mind is flooded with memories of his time in UNIT, from first meeting the Doctor in his second incarnation, all the way up to their last meeting in his fourth incarnation. When he snaps out of it, the Brigadier warmly greets the Doctor and apologizes for his earlier behavior. He laughs as he asks how he could ever forget their time together, but the Doctor takes it as a serious issue. He suggests that the Brigadier's mental block might need medical treatment, which causes the Brigadier to angrily state that he feels perfectly fine. However, he briefly goes faint before regaining his composure, and again apologizes for his attitude. He says that a few years ago he had a slight medical issue, which he disdainfully says was attributed to nervous exhaustion from overwork. The doctor asks when he left unit, and the brigadier says that he left 7 years beforehand, but 1 year into his retirement, he took up the job at the school as a maths teacher and commanding officer of their school training corps. The doctor thanks him for his trip down memory lane, and he says that he needs to find a TARDIS so he can go back to Nyssa and Tegan. The brigadier says that he once knew a girl called Tegan, perfectly describing the doctor's companion. The doctor realizes what is after happening and says that the TARDIS landed at the school 6 years prior, when the pod first arrived. The brigadier comments on the doctor's inability to still work the time machine correctly, but the doctor tells him that he needs his help to try and get back in contact with Tegan and Nyssa. Back in the past, Tegan rushes to the school for help and encounters the younger version of the brigadier. He brings her into his house and she tells him about Thurlow being hurt, but he says that he has never heard of him. She tries to explain what happened to them, but she says that she needs to bring medical help back to the TARDIS. The brigadier then surprises her by asking if the doctor is okay. She tells him about his current condition and the brigadier leads her outside, saying that he will try and find the school doctor, but says the staff are busy with the preparations for the celebration of the Queen's Silver Jubilee. This causes Tegan to realise that the TARDIS landed in the past. She tells this to the brigadier, which leads her to also realise that the burnt person in the TARDIS may not be the doctor. In the present, the headmaster visits Thurlow in the infirmary, and Thurlow tells him the truth about his alien origins and his deal with the Black Guardian. The headmaster seems to take it all in his stride and tells Thurlow that he needs to fulfill his obligation to the Black Guardian. Thurlow instead says that he will use the transmat pod to get back to the alien ship and escape. Suddenly the headmaster transforms into the Black Guardian and Thurlow tries to leave. However, he realizes that he is having another out-of-body experience, and the Black Guardian reiterates he will always be with him until he fulfills his obligation. Thurlow says that the Doctor isn't evil, but the Black Guardian says that the Doctor represents all he opposes, and imposes his own will on Thurlow, forcing him to follow his commands. Thurlow then wakes up and escapes from the infirmary. His escape is discovered by the nurse, who calls the Brigadier. He and the Doctor go to investigate the infirmary, and the Doctor suggests that Thurlow might be trying to escape in the transmat pod. Suddenly, due to events happening in the past simultaneously to those in the present, the Brigadier tells the Doctor about Tegan's realization about the burnt man. Back in the past, Nyssa waits outside for Tegan, but goes back inside to see the burnt man, wearing his blanket as a shawl, has rapidly healed much of the damage done to him. Due to his different appearance, Nyssa assumes that he is regenerated. The man tells Nyssa that he will soon be back to full strength and tells her to take off immediately. She refuses to leave without Tegan and goes outside to wait for her. After she leaves, the man, who calls himself Modron, says that he will have his revenge against the Time Lords after they abandoned his people to an eternity of suffering by becoming a Time Lord himself. Outside, Nyssa is joined by Tegan and the Brigadier. Tegan tells her about her suspicions, but Nyssa says that he is the Doctor and has just regenerated. The Brigadier mentions his own experiences with the Doctor's regenerations and leads them both into the TARDIS. Inside, they see Modron wearing one of the Doctor's old coats, but he is now rapidly aged with his exposed brain pulsating, which causes Nyssa and Tegan to scream. Part 3. In the present, the Doctor says that unlocking the Brigadier's memory is the key to unravelling the mystery of the transmat pod and getting back the TARDIS. The Brigadier expresses concern about being made to remember this, but the Doctor says that he needs his help to save Nyssa and Tegan. He then notices the Black Guardian's crystal and takes a wish him as he says they need to stop Thurlow from activating the transmat pod again. Back in the past, Tegan confronts Modron with her belief that he isn't the Doctor, citing his alien appearance. Modron says that she has no understanding of how regeneration works, and says that the transmat pod caused a mutation to occur during the process. Tegan asks if it is true, and Nyssa says it is possible, and the Brigadier concurs, remembering the different processes for the Doctor's previous regenerations. Modron says that they need to get back to the ship, as it will have a lab that help restore him to his normal appearance. Nyssa says that they can't leave without seeing what happened to Thurlow. Tegan again presses him on his identity, asking why he didn't arrive on Earth at the correct time, but Modron says that the warp ellipse caused a time distortion. He begs them to help him, and the Brigadier says they need to give him the benefit of the doubt. Back in the past, the Doctor and the Brigadier find Thurlow as he is trying to get the transmat pod to work. However, he forgot about the damaged beam transmitter and goes to fix it, but he stops when the Doctor confronts him. The Doctor sets about repairing it after giving Thurlow the Black Guardian's crystal. He finishes working on it and goes inside the pod with the Brigadier, whilst telling Thurlow to keep an eye on the transmitter to make sure that it's working. The Doctor asks the Brigadier if he joined Nyssa and Tegan and the TARDIS in the past. The Brigadier says that he can't remember, and the Doctor says that he needs to try because if his past and future selves meet, that it could cause a catastrophe. Suddenly Thurlow comes in and says that the transmitter has blown again. thereby stopping this and Tegan from piloting the TARDIS to them. The Brigadier then recalls that Tegan gave him a homing beacon for the TARDIS, and he tells the Doctor he's back in his quarters. The Doctor says that he don't have a moment to lose and rushes back to the school. In the past, under Modron's orders, Nissa pilots the TARDIS back to the starship. He says that the ship's atmosphere will help with his restoration, but says that he must go into it alone as the others might contaminate it. Tegan refuses to believe him and prevents Nissa from opening the doors, saying that they either all go together or no one goes. Modron begs her to let him leave, saying that he is in agony. The Brigadier and Nissa say that they must let him go, and Tegan reluctantly agrees. A short while later, after Modron has left, the Brigadier says that he will go follow him. Tegan says that she will join him, but he orders her and Nissa to stay in the TARDIS. His military attitude doesn't impress either of them, with Tegan calling him a chauvinist after he exits the TARDIS. Back in the present, the Doctor activates the homing beacon and then realizes that the others must have piloted the TARDIS back to the ship to have the person they assumed was him. He says they need to go back into the transmat, explain to a confused Turlo that they can use the homing beacon in lieu of the transmat beam to guide them. They arrive back at the pod, with the Brigadier complaining about having gone up and down the hill so many times in one day. The Doctor thanks him for coming to say goodbye, but the Brigadier refuses to let him go alone. He then tries to order Turlo to remain behind, highlighting the danger, but the Doctor cheekily says that he can stay behind as well in order to keep Turlo safe. The Brigadier mutters about the moral blackmail, but relents, and the Doctor activates the pod, bringing them back to the ship. As they make their way down the corridors, the Doctor spots a door that he didn't see the last time he was on the ship. He instructs Turlo to carry on and find the TARDIS, and tells the Brigadier to follow him. They go through the door and find a room with several upright gurneys, all into a console in the centre of the room. The Doctor says it is a metamorphic symbiosis regenerator, a piece of Time Lord equipment used during regeneration emergencies. The Brigadier asks how it got there, and the Doctor says that it must have been stolen and that someone has been trying to use it to regenerate. The Brigadier says that it could be the person impersonating the Doctor and wonders why they want to regenerate. Elsewhere on the ship, a severely weakened Modron addresses a group of statues, all of which look similar to him. He says that he has returned with a TARDIS. He says the time of their relief is nearly at hand before collapsing to the floor and crawling away slowly. A short while later, Turlo enters the room with the statues, and one of them comes alive in the form of the Black Guardian. Turlo apologizes for not being able to stop the Doctor, but the Black Guardian says the Doctor will soon be dead. He then instructs Turlo to turn the statue that he is currently residing in, and when he does so, it opens a door to a secret chamber containing a group of comatose aliens, all of which look like Modron. Turlo goes into the room but quickly leaves again when the figures start to wake up. Back in the regeneration chamber, the Brigadier hears someone outside calling for the Doctor and goes out to investigate. He narrowly misses his younger self, and after a short reconnaissance, he returns to the regeneration chamber to discover the Doctor missing. However, he sees Modron on the floor, who asks for his help. Thinking that he is the Doctor, the Brigadier follows his instructions and puts him into one of the gurneys. He then activates the console, but he then realizes that Modron isn't the Doctor, and Modron reveals himself. The Brigadier demands to know where the Doctor is, threatening to turn off the machine and let Modron die. Modron reveals that he and his people cannot die. Meanwhile, on the TARDIS, Tegan grows tired of waiting and says that she is going to look for the Doctor, who at that moment walks through the doors and greets them as if nothing has happened at all. He asks where Turlo is, saying that he sent him on ahead and whilst he went with the Brigadier. Tegan says that they have also brought the Brigadier with them, and the Doctor gives out to them for letting him come. Nissa realises what could happen if they meet, and the Doctor says that they need to find them immediately. After they leave the TARDIS, Turlo sneaks in and tries to pilot it away, but the Black Guardian appears on the external view screen. He says that he will not allow Turlo to leave until they have witnessed the end of the Doctor. Outside the regeneration room, the Doctor tells Tegan to wait whilst he and Nissa go inside. He tells her to keep an eye out for the younger Brigadier to prevent him from meeting his older self. Inside, the Doctor meets Modron, who reveals that he stole the symbiosis machine from Gallifrey in an effort to make him and the others on the ship Time Lords. However, he says the process backfired and it caused the mutations that he and the others now suffer. He says that they are constantly in a state of agony due to the deteriorating effects of the mutation, but instead of dying, they regenerate and go through the whole painful process again. He says that he and the others were banished from their homeworld and exiled to the starship. He blames the Time Lords for their fate, but the Doctor says it is because of their own greed that they are now suffering. Suddenly, Tegan rushes into the room, closely followed by Modron's colleagues, who all begin to take their places on the gurneys. Modron begs the Doctor to help, but he says that he can't. When Tegan asks why he won't, the Doctor angrily says that if he does help them, then he will no longer be a Time Lord. Part 4. The doctor explains to his confused companions that he can only regenerate 12 times before dying completely. He says that he has already regenerated 4 times previously, and that if he was to use his remaining regenerations to save Mordrin and his 7 colleagues, then he would be on his last body. The Brigadier suggests that they go back to the TARDIS as they are outnumbered, but Mordrin says that they mean them no harm and only want the doctor's help. He says everything that they have tried has failed, and the doctor is the only one who can help them. The doctor says that he cannot help, and Mordrin tells him to leave, but he must accept the consequences of his choice. The doctor leads the others back to the TARDIS, and Mordrin gets off the gurney. The other mutants begin to complain, but Mordrin says that the doctor will soon return of his own volition. Meanwhile, back on the TARDIS, the Black Guardian says that his plans are at risk by the presence of the 2 Brigadiers. Turlough realizes the danger of the 2 versions meeting, and the Black Guardian tells him to keep them separate. Turlough reluctantly leaves the TARDIS and searches for the younger Brigadier, eventually finding him wandering the corridors. Turlough tells him that he will bring him to the doctor and then leads him through the corridors. The Brigadier asks what the doctor looks like, and Turlough confirms that Mordrin was masquerading as the doctor. He then leads the Brigadier into the room that the mutants were hibernating in and locks him inside. Elsewhere, the doctor carefully leads the others back to the TARDIS to explain to the Brigadier about the presence of his younger self. They arrive back at the time machine, and Nissa says that there is no sign of Turlough around. The doctor says that he will take the Brigadier back to Earth, but he is reluctant to go without ensuring the safety of his younger self. Nissa interrupts them by pointing to the external view screen, which shows Turlough approaching, and the doctor goes out to meet him. He tells him that he will take the older Brigadier back to his own time, and instructs Turlough to find the younger one and take him to the transmit pod, which he has reprogrammed to land in the centre of the TARDIS, but not to let him out until the doctor comes to collect them. However, shortly after the TARDIS leaves, Nissa and Tegan begin to feel nauseous and start to age and decay rapidly. The Brigadier says that it looks like what happened to Mordrin, and the doctor realizes that they have been contaminated and that the only way to save them is to go back to Mordrin's ship. They arrive back and see that the effects of the mutation have reversed. The doctor says that they must have been infected when they got onto the ship, but any attempt to leave the warp ellipse will result in the same outcome. The Brigadier asks why he and the doctor weren't affected, but the doctor says that he doesn't know. The doctor then says he has an idea, and after some tinkering attempts to take off again, but just missing the arrival of the younger Brigadier, who managed to escape the room. He encounters Mordrin and the other mutants, who realize the danger of him staying there in the event that the TARDIS returns again. Mordrin says that they must get the younger Brigadier back to Earth, and they take him to the transmit pod. Meanwhile, the TARDIS is forced to return to the ship again, as this time Nissa and Tegan grew younger in the attempt to escape the warp ellipse. They return to their normal ages just as an alarm goes off on the console. The doctor says it is from the transmit pod, which has returned to the ship, and he explains that it will not work until the TARDIS can escape the ship completely. With no other choice, the doctor leads the others out of the TARDIS to face Mordrin. Nissa blames Mordrin for their infection, but he says that it wasn't intentional. The Brigadier says that there must surely be some cure that they can come up with, but Mordrin says that nothing they have on the ship will help. With no other choice and the coaxing of his companions, the doctor tells Mordrin to bring him to the regeneration chamber. Elsewhere on the ship, the Black Guardian berates Turlough for not having sent the younger Brigadier away. He tells him to ensure that they are kept apart and threatens to kill Turlough if he fails again. In the regeneration chamber, the doctor prepares the machinery and tells the Brigadier how to operate it. The Brigadier activates it and begins to count down the regeneration energy transfer. Suddenly, the younger Brigadier appears, having left the transmat pod after removing the TARDIS homing beacon from it. The doctor tells him to leave, but it is too late as the older Brigadier says that he remembers everything before reaching out to his younger self. The two touch hands and there is suddenly a blast of energy. Mordrin and the other mutants go into comas whilst the doctor helps Tegan and Nissa off their gurneys. After checking to make sure both the Brigadiers are alright, he helps the older one back to his feet and tells Nissa to bring him to the TARDIS to keep him confined until he calls for them. After they leave, the Brigadier says that they are lucky the Brigadiers touched when they did, as the feedback pulse caused by their temporal energy surrounding them both acted as a substitute for the regeneration energy. He reveals that she and Nissa were cured, but the mutants have died, which he says is all that they wanted. He then says that they need to get back the younger Brigadier to his own time, and they help him up. Tegan thanks the Doctor for his willingness to sacrifice his lives for them. As they make their way back to the TARDIS, the power on the ship starts to fluctuate. The Doctor says that the ship is dying and they need to get off it as soon as possible. They get into the TARDIS and bring the younger Brigadier back to his own time and leave him at the obelisk, where he is found by the school doctor. They then drop the older Brigadier back, and as they say goodbye, the Brigadier asks about Turlough. Nissa and Tegan realize that he must still be on the ship, and they rush back into the TARDIS, followed by the Doctor. However, they see Turlough at the control console, having stowed away on the ship after the energy feedback pulse broke the Black Guardian's crystal. Turlough asks if he can join them, and despite concerned looks from Tegan and Nissa, the Doctor welcomes them on board with a handshake. End of the story. So, now that we have wrapped up both timelines in one neat little confusing bow, we'll go to the one spot where we know everything is just standard, which is the trivia spot. So, what have you got for us this week?
Cool. So, the air date for Mortal Undead is the 1st of February to the 9th of February 1983. I've said this before, I still find it weird staying only two, like, it being only 2 weeks, it messes with my brain. Anyway. The writer of the story is Peter Grimwade. This is the second of three writing credits for Peter. He also wrote Time Flight. He does also have four directing credits in Doctor Who, which were Full Circle, Legopolis, Kinda, and Earthshock. And we'll see his writing work one more time in Planet of Fire. The director of the story is another Peter. This time it's Peter Moffat. Doctor Who directing credit 3 of 6 for Peter Moffat. He previously directed State of Decay and The Visitation, and we'll see his work again in The Five Doctors, The Twin Dilemma, and The Two Doctors. There's a lot of Peters in this one, so we just have to keep all of our Peters aligned properly.
We have 3 Peters and 2 Peter Moffats.
Yeah. The title of the story, Mordrin Undead, actually comes from 2 Welsh words. Which is Mor, spelled M-A-R-W, and I've probably butchered that in Welsh, my apologies, which means dead, and Dyn, D-Y-N, which means man. So technically the title is like Dead Man Undead, or Undead Dead Man, or something of that vein. The original intent of the production team was actually for Ian Chesterton to be the character, which with the school setting makes way more fucking sense.
It really does.
So originally it was meant to be Ian, which is why they set it in a school in the fucking first place. However, William Russell wasn't available because he had a stage commitment at the same time, so they couldn't use him. Then they considered using Harry Sullivan, again, as another sort of former male companion, before ultimately they decided on the Brigadier as the character that was going to be existing in our two timelines. An interesting thing, so we've discussed sort of briefly before, it's been discussed by people in plenty of other podcasts and things, that usually the way it worked with the BBC was that if you created a character or an alien species or whatever, that you owned the copyright for that character and species, which is why there's some episodes that can't be aired anymore because the rights holders won't give them up, or there's sometimes where it might make sense for a character to come back but they can't because the person who originally created that character won't give permission. What I find interesting is that former producer Graham Williams was the one who created the Guardians, and he did not know about the return of the Black Guardian in this season until years later during an onstage interview, which, I mean, maybe it's different for something more conceptual, maybe because, you know, Graham was a producer as well, maybe the BBC held the rights to the Guardians, but I'm very curious how that works. In terms of when can they reuse a character willy-nilly, and when do they need to ask permission and pay royalties? Because I assumed it was the latter all the time, but apparently not.
Yeah, no. I wish someone would just put an elaborate false moustache and trick that individual with who has the rights to the episodes that can't be shown on streaming, and just bite it back and then sell it to the BBC.
Yeah. Originally, the slot in the schedule where this story appears was meant to be given over to the long delayed story of the Song of the Space Whale, or just Space Whale, in which Turlough would have been one of a group of colonists. The story was cancelled again, and this story was put in its place. Since it would now serve to introduce Turlough rather than include him as an established character, his role was merged with one of the schoolboys. So that's how his origin came to be. The reason why Peter Grimwade based the story in a public school really just comes from his own upbringing. He went to Truro School, which is an all-boys school in Cornwall, and he, quote-unquote, knew the background of a dreadful minor public school very well. For people who maybe aren't familiar as well with the British education system, public school is actually what they call privately funded schools. So
yeah, like Eton
where
and
you pay
all that kind of stuff.
You pay fees, so your Eton's and all that kind of shit. They're called public schools because they're funded by the public, as opposed to state schools that are funded by the state. Whereas most people, like we would say in Ireland, we have public schools and private schools. So that's the sort of thing. This part of this story is set in 1977, which apparently was intended to sort of correct the unit dating controversy, and it really just sort of made it worse. It didn't do anything to fix it.
No, and like it makes things really weird, right? Because so when you start off in 1983, and the brigadier says that in 30 years of soldiering, he he's been a soldier for 30 years. So that would mean he first enlisted in 1953. Mm. And later on, you're told that in the story Twice Upon a Time that like we meet the brigadier's grandfather. Mm. But like that guy's still very young. And so I can imagine that kind of really fucks with it, because surely then wouldn't he be his dad, because he's not old enough to be a granddad.
Twice Upon a Time was World War
One.
Right. And that guy was his grandfather. Now, maybe he had kids young. Like, I mean, he was played by Mark Gatiss, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That one. And Mark Gatiss is in his 50s? Late 40s. Sorry, Mark Gatiss, I don't know how old you are. So he could have had a son who was 20.
Mm.
In World War One, who could have then had Alistair a few years later, so say, you know, mid to late 1920s.
Mm.
And then by the time of like the Korean War, which is really ironic because I was just saying to Paddy that I'm really watching that at the moment, then you have Alistair. He wouldn't have been enlisted, he would have been but going to army college or whatever. So it does work, but not really. I mean, if you think about it, like, yeah. Sorry, go on.
Mark Gatiss is 57, so he would have been about 52.
Yeah, so he could have had a son in his late 20s.
But if the... I don't know. Because he's a captain, I think, in that story. And being a captain at 50... If you're like part of a military family in the British Army, he's not doing well.
Yeah, but it's fine because then his grandson comes along. And is like, "Fuck you, granddad," and he just
But pretty much the whole unit dating controversy is a fucking spider's web.
Yeah, because again, if you think back to Pyramids of Mars, Sarah says she's from 1980. Sarah Jane says she's from 1980, mm-hmm. But even the story wasn't airing in 1980; it was airing in the 70s. Yeah. So. It's a whole thing. Anyway, back on tack. Mark Strickson, who plays Turlough, claimed the communication crystal was attached to a car battery to make it bright enough to be seen on camera. But each scene with it had to be 14 seconds long and no longer, because otherwise it got too hot for him to hold. Which sounds a bit mental. Peter Grimwood originally wanted the events of the story to take place several centuries apart, but he was encouraged to bring them closer together so that one character, in this case the Brigadier, could be present in both time periods. Peter included flashback scenes based on the success of similar scenes in Legopolis and Earthshock, both of which he directed, so he knew those would go down well. In terms of the way Mordrin was presented in his sort of slowly regenerating, presentation, the makeup designer, Sheila Wells, was originally disappointed with the way the brain protuberance blended in with his skin. And so when working it out, the costume designer, Amy Roberts, hid the join by adding the metal headband that they wear to make it a bit more, you know, natural and not quite as weird. This is a baffling script in some ways. Do you know, there's, you know, we were saying forwards in time, backwards in time, up the hill, down the hill, into the TARDIS, into the pod, onto the ship, blah, blah, blah. Nick Courtney said he was completely baffled by it. and Peter Davison thought there was loads of plot holes. And he was amazed the audience didn't notice or didn't call them out.
Will we discuss those plot holes? Stay tuned to find out.
We may do, yeah. Well, who knows, maybe he knew ones that we didn't. Apparently he claimed it taught him a lesson about plots in general. And maybe how many holes you can have before your plot becomes a colander. David Collings was cast as Mordrin. Apparently it's due to his physical resemblance to Peter Davison. I'm going to talk more about that a bit later on. So there's a scene in part four that you described where we have a regressed to children version of Nissa and Tegan. They were played by Lucy Baker and Cyan Pattenden, respectively. They have no credits. They weren't credited on screen or in Radio Times, despite the fact they both have dialogue. Which, for people with dialogue to go uncredited, is very rare. And if I was them, I'd be demanding my credits because, that's the whole thing. Like, if you're, I'm not an expert in this area, and if you are, then do please contact us and let us know. But, like, if you're an extra, you get paid a set amount. If you're a named or prominent character, you get paid a little bit more. If you speak, you get paid more again. And that's sort of the way the sort of hierarchy of ranking works. And so if you're an extra and you speak, you also get a couple of extra. Do you know what I mean? So they were playing Nissa and Tegan, and they spoke out loud. Why no credits? Not really fair.
No.
But let's go on to our cast who is credited. So, returning as Brigadier Alistair Gordon Lethbridge Stewart, we have the wonderful Nicholas Courtney. This is story many of many. Right? I'm not going to list them all out, right? Many of many for Nicholas. And story many of many for Nicholas, specifically as Alistair. And this is not his last. We'll see Nicholas twice more in Doctor Who, once in The Five Doctors and again in Battlefield. And then we'll see him once more in the Sarah Jane Adventures, Enemy of the Bane. Interestingly, Peter Davison and Nick Courtney did previously appear together in the show All Creatures Great and Small in an episode called Matters of Life and Death, which I think is a weirdly sort of coincidental title to this one. Mordrin is played by David Collings. Like I mentioned, this is the final of three on-screen Doctor Who appearances for David. We previously saw him as Voros in Revenge of the Cybermen, and then as Powell in Robots of Death. The Black Guardian, we see the return of Valentin Dial, I can't remember how I said his name last time. I probably butchered it then as well. This is Doctor Who credit 204 for Valentin. We previously saw him in The Armageddon Factor, and we'll see him again in Terminus and Enlightenment. The headmaster of the school is played by Angus MacKay. This is the second acting credit on Doctor Who for Angus. We previously saw him as Barusa in The Deadly Assassin. As Hippo Ibbotson, We have Stephen Garlick. This is the only Doctor Who acting credit for Stephen. However, he does have some non-Who credits, including Look and Read, Scrooge, Two People, The Tomorrow People, and The Dark Crystal. Mm. Lastly, as Whistler Thurlow, we have Mark Strickson. This is the first Doctor Who acting credit for Mark. I will discuss him more next week when he's sort of a bit more companion-y.
I left out his first name because apparently you don't actually find out his first name until near the end of his run. So that's why I just introduced him as Turlo.
Oh, his name is Vislor, apparently. Or Vislor. Yes, Vislor. I've never heard his first name pronounced. So.
Yeah, it's Vislor Turlo.
Cool.
So, we now come to the character discussion part of the show. Or sometimes we say, the welcome to the middle of the film. Haven't said that in a while. This part is where we discuss the Doctor, the companions of the story, who are, I would say, Tegan, Nyssa, and the Brigadier.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be discussing the Brigadier as one sole entity. Yeah, not doing two Brigadier discussion points. Then we have prominent characters of, I have put down Turlo, and then villains of the Black Guardian and Modron.
Yes, I would agree.
I don't know how you feel about Modron, but I feel one way about him.
Oh, I do. Okay. Well, I think we feel the same way about him, and we'll get to that.
So, you did the socials, you get to go first. Give us your thoughts on the Doctor.
I didn't mind the Doctor in this one. Which sounds really shit, but if you've been listening to our previous Peter Davison episodes, that's actually high praise coming from me. I quite liked him. There was nothing, for the most part, I'm going to actually put an asterisk on what I just said. There was nothing for the most part that I took issue with. There was a lot of the Fifth Doctor that we love and that we really like to see. So the way he took care of Tegan, I think, was nice. Putting her at ease, explaining the whole thing from last week, which I'd had that big question about. We have the way, again, his complete and utter trust in Nyssa is just amazing. He's just like, no, you stay here and Nyssa will take you home. I'm like, I love that. I love seeing him have someone that he trusts that much, you know, which is great. I loved actually his scenes with the brig were actually really nice. Do you know? He's like, oh my god, it's the Brigadier. He's like, oh no, he doesn't know who I am. Okay, okay, play cool, play cool. Okay, hi. Do you know? Like, I love all that bit. I thought was really good. His interactions with Turlo were a bit odd in the sense that, like, I don't know if that he's used to having, like, Nyssa around, and he was obviously used to having Adric around, but like, he never questions Turlo's knowledge at any point. And like, Turlo being from 1983 Earth and knowing about warp bubbles and whatever, I'm like, hello, red flag anywhere? No, just skipping all the flags, fair enough. And, like, the way he was at the brig, where, you know, he was, like, obviously trying to keep the brig safe. He's like, no, you should stay here. He's like, no, I'm going with you, but, you know, Turlo should stay here. He's like, oh, well, if Turlo's going to stay, then you really should stay to take care of him, shouldn't you? And, like, the brig's just reacting, like, oh, for fuck's sake. which I thought was really good. The bits that I sort of struggled with a little bit was actually his whole thing with Mordrin and the situation that he was put in. Because, full disclosure, the situation he was in was shit.
Mm-hmm.
Was absolutely shit. Because it's basically suicide. If he helps these people, it is suicide. And, you know, I think there's an interesting conversation to be had around, you know, is it selfish of him to choose not to help them? To prolong their unending suffering when all they want to do is die? That's all they want. But he says no. That it would mean that he's not a Time Lord anymore. He only lives one life. And, you know, there is a question around, is that selfish? Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
He could live one very full life. They're living unending misery. You know, and the fact that he's not willing to even consider it, he doesn't even try to find an alternative way to help them. He's just like, no, I can't do it. So I think there is an interesting question to be had on that we can maybe talk about in a bit, because I'm curious to see what your thoughts on that. But the bit that actually got me, and again, full disclosure, this could be me and my slight aversion to this version of the Doctor, right? So take it in stride. If the Brigadier wasn't there, would the Doctor have given up his regeneration to save Nyssa and Tegan? Because by the look on his face, I don't think he fucking would have.
Yeah.
I thought there was something about that interaction and Tegan thanking him later. And I was like, you're thanking him. And this was my read of it, right? So I'm going to be very curious what you saw. But my read of it was, you're thanking him for being backed into a corner.
Yeah.
By a man that he really respects. If the Brigadier wasn't there, would he have just left the girls on the ship? And left. I don't know. But there's a couple of looks that Peter gave that I'm like, ooh. Interesting Dark Doctor eyes there for a second. So yeah, so like, up until that part, I really enjoyed him. I thought, again, his dynamics with everyone in the story were really good. He worked really well with the Brigadier. Even like him and Turlough got along quite well. Again, huge red flags that he was just ignoring, but you know, I think he misses Adric. Not that you'd know it, but I think he does. So yeah, it's just that I have a huge question mark around the sacrifice that he was willing to make. How about you?
I actually disagree with you on this. I think he's a fucking prick for the majority of this story.
Okay.
Yeah, because, so it starts off, now this was my read of it, in the sense of, when Tegan comes out, she's clearly suffering PTSD. But the way he's like, Tegan. It's like he's chiding her for feeling the way that she's feeling. Like you could kind of, like, and then he comes up and he's like, going, like, it's just your mind's way of coping with it and all this kind of stuff. But it's like, you sound as if you're so fucked off with actually saying this to her so many times. You just sound exasperated with it. And then later on when, and I think this is like part of the, like, I'll say it here now, okay? I think Peter Grimwade is a good director. I think he is a bad writer. Because what was the other story that he did? Time Flight.
He also wrote Time Flight, yeah.
Yeah. So this has an awful lot of inconsistencies. And one of them is the Brig remembers getting into the TARDIS with Nyssa and Tegan, and he says it to the Doctor. And then Tegan says, oh, the Brigadier's with us. Nyssa and Tegan both say that he came with them, and he only gives out to Tegan. He calls her stupid. And I'm like, why do you never have a go at Nyssa when she is just as culpable of making the mistake as Tegan is? You've never, ever lambasted Nyssa the way that you go after Tegan. And then, like, later on, you know, it's the sort of, okay, he tries to patch it up with saying, look, I need you to do something important. I need you to stop the younger Brigadier from coming in here. And then it's, again, what was it? As you said, like, I agree that there's a massive asterisk over the fact of he's backed into a corner. And it's like, he didn't even try. Like Maudrin said, there's nothing that we can do. And I'm like, yes, there's nothing that you can do because you stole Time Lord technology. Here we have an actual Time Lord with everything that is on the ship. he might be able to do something that doesn't require the sacrifice of his lives, but can save you. But there's just nothing done. And as I said, like, it does come across like the doctor is like, yeah, like I didn't like being in that scenario, to give you the honesty. And I'm trying to think back, and I've been thinking back over Peter's run so far, and I don't see any of the warmth with his companions that Tom would have had with his, or John, or Patrick, or Bill had with theirs. And I know that I said he had a good run last week, because it seemed like he was caring about Tegan. But then I also remember said that he was using her as a tool to try and get out the Mara. And it's like, I just had this thing. I don't get any warmth or connection. Even with Nyssa, I don't get any of that same cuddly vibe with Peter or with any of his companions. And the only time that he seems happy in this story, or where he seems nice, is when he's actually dealing with the Brigadier. And like, it's like that thing of where, oh, you're with your new friends, but then your old friend comes over and you're like, oh, pally pally with your old friend, and you just kind of, new people, yeah, you can go entertain yourselves or whatever. And like, for me, there's nothing of his normal good standout stuff that we like seeing the Doctor in terms of intelligence and problem solving. Nothing for me stands out enough to cover his just poor behavior to his companions in the story.
I'm going to take what you said about the Tegan thing. So I think the first scene with Tegan, I think I may have had a bit of rose-tinted glasses from Snake Dance.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, it's the closing off of that situation. My thing about him calling her an idiot, because I hadn't forgotten it, I was planning on discussing it later with Tegan. I think the reason why, because I totally agree with you, he never lashes out at Nyssa, ever. Right? Which I chalk up to trust, but I think the more we're going to discuss this over the episodes, I might change that, right? But I think the reason he's blaming Tegan is because it's Tegan the Brigadier remembers.
Hmm.
You know, Tegan is the one that he interacted with. And so, in the Doctor's mind, Tegan had point on this and took him with her anyway. Was it a stupid thing to say to her? Yeah. Was it fair? No. Was it possibly said out of fear for this man he has known for, you know, 4 generations of his life, who, like, they don't really explain the effect that happens when you come into contact with your previous self.
Mm-hmm.
But zap was the word that was used.
Yeah.
And so Doctor Who is deliberately vague on this topic. But, you know, he now knows there's 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, shit. The Brig didn't tell him. Because the Brig said that he was in the TARDIS, but he says that he saw the TARDIS leaving and he was left behind. The Brig didn't tell him that he had gone to the ship. He didn't know. The Doctor didn't know that. He only brought his Brigadier because his Brigadier didn't remember being there. And then suddenly Tegan saying, no, I did bring him. And he's like, what the fuck did you mean you brought him? And I think it was just frustration. I think it was directed badly at her. Totally take you on board there. And yeah, I'm glad we're on the same page around the, was he willing to give up his regenerations? I agree with you in the sense that, like, this Doctor seems to be a solo artist who has people along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than a guy with friends. Like I said, I do think he trusts Nyssa to the nth degree. I 100% agree with that. However, I think he does also treat her as a backup, a pilot, someone that he can knows will take care of the TARDIS while he's off playing cricket or doing whatever he's doing. You know, which is great to see that trust, him putting that trust in someone, particularly with something like the TARDIS, which he's been very protective of in the past. But yeah, does he see them as his friends? No. Does he treat them the same way he's treated other friends in the past? Yes and no. Like, Harry Sullivan is an imbecile, comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
But does he treat, and again, I'll take your point on Tegan in particular, does he treat Tegan the way he treated Barbara or Dodo or Vicky or, you know, Liz Shaw or Joe? No, he doesn't. He supports her on occasion. He trusts her a lot on occasion. But there isn't that warm, cuddly nature to it.
Mm.
You know, he's not the granddad. He's not the, you know, the clown jester Chris. Friend. He's mm-hmm. not the debonair uncle. He's not the vagabond boyfriend or whatever. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have that type of relationship with them. At most, you could maybe say he has a brotherly relationship with them. Maybe. Sometimes your brothers are dickheads. I have three, mm-hmm. so, you know. So do you.
Yes.
But no, I take it. I don't know, maybe, you know, a bit of a spoiler. I did enjoy a lot of the story, so maybe I was a bit rose-tinted on it. But I'm glad we agree on the regenerations at the end.
Mm. And like, this is like, and like, no, like, again, there are aspects of the story that I really enjoy. I really do. Unfortunately, the Doctor is just not one of them in this particular story.
And that's fine too.
Yeah.
That is fine too. We go on to our companions, so.
Yes. So we have the Brig, Nyssa, and Tegan. So you can rank it. Who do you want to discuss?
Okay, I'm going to leave the Brig for a while because
yeah,
take time with him. Let's do Nyssa, Tegan, and the Brig, I think.
Yeah.
Because in terms of story impact, I think that that's probably the definitive order. I really liked Nyssa in this, and I also thought it was her stupidest story ever.
Mm.
Right? Really liked her for a number of reasons, right? Again, she's supportive of Tegan, which is always great. I love their dynamic. Must say, I really did like her outfit. Just saying. Mm-hmm. Again, we see that, like, Nyssa's domain is the TARDIS console. Like,
mm-hmm.
and I love seeing it because so often in Doctor Who, the companions just stood there while the Doctor was doing everything, where she's such a collaborative part of that space, mm-hmm. which is great. However, I'm going to say this about Tegan as well, but I'm going to say it about Nyssa a bit more. The woman is so fucking trusting. It's a bit insane.
Mm.
Bearing in mind, the person they found was scarred as hell. And I don't care what any casting director says, that body looked nothing like Peter Davison.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But okay, that's just, you know, suspension of disbelief. They do look alike. Whatever. Nyssa, you're not that gullible, my love. Surely to Christ. Like, you're an intelligent woman who has seen someone take on the guise of someone else, and that someone wasn't nice, and the guise he took on was the guise of your fucking dad. Do you know? And, like, she just seems to be so easily taken in. Now, part of that could just be panic that, like, you know, she's hoping against hope that this is the Doctor, because if it isn't, then where the fuck is he, right? But I think it's probably her most naive we've seen her since her first story. And in terms of Nyssa being super intelligent and whatever, it's like, really? I also would have wanted to see more of Nyssa trying to solve Mordrin's problem. Do you know, again, we get the Brigadier kind of guilting, from our perspective, the Doctor into doing anything. But I would have expected Nyssa, particularly the Nyssa who is trusted with the TARDIS, who, you know, understands a certain amount of time and technology, to be sort of fighting for why we need to help them somehow. We need to find a way. And she doesn't. And I didn't particularly like that. I thought she would have at this point in her development. Also, it's just me, or is she a bit jealous of Turlo? This is Mitch.
Maybe.
But yeah, so again, like, Nyssa and Tegan together are great. Again, Nyssa's being trusted by the Doctor is always great to see. Nyssa owning that TARDIS console is great. It's funny seeing her with the Brigadier, because obviously not only is she young, but she's also from a different planet, and so there's the sort of interesting interaction there.
Yeah.
But once they were all back together again, and the quote-unquote plot was, Mordrin's plot was unveiled, I would have wanted to see Nyssa sort of wanting to explore the machine, wanting to find a way to help. And I was a bit annoyed that she didn't. How about you?
So, two things. One, because I'll probably say it a couple of times throughout the pod, and there's no point leaving it to the overall. But, so I have, as I said before, I generally tend to watch the stories twice. Once as I'm doing writing up the summary, and then I watch it again, because doing it over the course of 4 days, sometimes I miss important moments in terms of if I'm trying to write down all my recollections for the characters on the 4 day. So I watched it twice, and I was watching it for the second time, and I just, at one point, I was like, would someone, for the love of fucking God, ask him a question only the Doctor would know? Because he's heard all your names, because you've been speaking to each other. So it's very easy for someone who knows about Time Lords to talk about regenerations and all this type of jazz, and then parrot back names that they've heard. If you're skeptical, ask him about Adric. Ask him about the Master. Ask him about the Mara. Ask the Brigadier. Ask him about UNIT. Ask him about whatever. Like, because the younger version obviously has all his memories intact. So someone, for the love of God, just ask him a fucking question. On to Nyssa specifically. I got big Sigourney Weaver and Galaxy Quest vibes from her this week. because it's my job to ask the computer the question that someone has just asked me. And unfortunately, like, I agree with you that I wanted more from Nyssa. And again, I think that this is an issue for the writing, the ability of writers in this era to do a more than two companion TARDIS. Because Turlo gets brought in, and Turlo has his side story, and it's fine. But then the Brigadiers are brought in various capacities. And Tegan is the more prominent companion here. And Nyssa is essentially, she's shunted to the side again just for shock reactions, piloting the TARDIS back and forth, and adding the statistical exposition scene. You know, like, the odds of that are several billion to one. Or, you know, could the regeneration be mutation? It's possible. What's this? It's a oh, it's a warp ellipse. That's very rare. That type of thing. It's like, there's nothing from what we've seen in terms of, oh, like, where was she, what did we talk about where she was really good? Like, Earth, not Earth Shock, Four to Doomsday, or even to an extent, Time Flight. Like, we know that Nyssa is capable of so much more. But again, she's just the person that answers the phones, essentially, here. And it's kind of disappointing for me.
Yeah. Nyssa's kind of the guy in the chair.
Yeah. Pretty much. And it's, as I said, like, I know that we had to have our scenes with Turlo, and we brought back the nostalgia character with the Brigadier. And it was great seeing the Brigadier. Like, I love the Brig. But again, it just sacrificed the agency of a character that we know is capable of so much more. But I did love her and Tegan's whole kind of like sisters together type thing, you know, where they're like both rolling their eyes at the Brig or the Doctor, or both like sharing those like kind of, are they fucking serious glances when they're talking about Turlo type thing. So, like, their relationship is great as always.
Yeah, I agree.
So now we move on to Tegan, or as the school students of 1977 called her, Switzwoo.
I think this is really good for Tegan. And his back-to-back stories, now obviously Tegan herself didn't do a lot in Snake Dance, but it was a good Tegan-focused story. I think this is a very strong Tegan story in a similar vein to Cashavalva. In the sense that it's Tegan stepping up, Tegan taking charge in many ways, Tegan putting her foot down where she needs to, but also being the team player where required. I do think, like, having the follow up to the Mara be her first scene with the Doctor, I think, is a bit weird, and it does feel a bit tacked on, particularly because she's wearing the same clothes. So she says, I'm still having nightmares, but like, from a TV continuity perspective, she's wearing the same clothes, so how long has it been? I say as I'm sat wearing the same jumper I wore yesterday and the day before. But that scene, you know, you and I were different takes on that a little bit. I appreciate the fact that Tegan was like, you know, can I go back to Earth for a while? Because it's very different to Tegan of her first season with the Fifth Doctor, which was, I just want to go home, get me home, I'm going to miss my flight, I'm going to be late for my work or whatever. This was sort of her showing a bit of vulnerability, which Tegan doesn't do very often, and saying, I just need to be grounded a bit. Do you know? Which I liked. I thought was really good. The whole thing with Tegan and the body and thinking it's the Doctor, it's very similar to Nyssa in that respect, for the initial reaction of, that looks nothing like him. Why do you think that is him? You've absolutely no proof that's him. Where are you getting this information from? But what I like is obviously later on, she pays attention. She's like, he's being fucking weird. Now, I do agree with you. Just ask him a question, Tegan. Like, she's trying to show Nyssa, like, hey, let's not just trust what we want it to be true. Let's, you know, whatever. You know, like, if we do two truths and a lie, Tegan, or something. Like, you know what I mean? What conversation did we have this morning? Where am I from? What's my last name? Any number of things she could have asked him. But I like the way she stands up to both Nyssa and the Brig. And she stands there and says, I don't agree. I think this is bullshit. She concedes to the fact that she's in the minority and they make their decision. She's like, you can tell by the look on her face. She's like, if this all goes tits up, do not fucking come blame me because it's not my fucking fault. I warned you or whatever. But also she doesn't gloat about it. She has that look on her face of if this goes wrong, it's your fault, not mine. But she doesn't come back later on and be like, I fucking told you. Why didn't you listen to me? There's no whininess in it. She was firm. She stood her ground. She was outvoted. Fair enough. Grant. Which I think shows a more grown-up Tegan than we would have seen in her first season.
Yes.
Her scenes at the brig, I quite like because I don't think she knows what to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? Because he's so polite, but also so condescending and chauvinistic. And, I mean, that just is the way the brig is. Do you know? He was like that in the John Pertwee run. We spoke about it specifically in, was it The Invasion? Where he was like that as well. He's old school, which he thinks is chivalrous, and it comes across as chauvinistic, right? That just is what it is. So it's funny to see like these sort of this modern girls sort of stood next to him going, and you could tell she's like, sure, granddad. Just like, oh, you used to travel with him. Oh, good for you. Isn't that great? Well, in this day and age, we do that type of thing. You know, like
it's funny the way you're acting there because we're going to have this conversation with another character you love down the line, and your attitude is very in the reverse.
But as in, like, the way she deals with him, I think, is perfect. She doesn't get angry and belligerent or whatever. She sort of recognizes that, like, okay, this man has his notions. Let him do what he needs to do. But then she doesn't kowtow either, in the sense that, like, she'll still do her own thing if she wants to. Do you know? Like, she's not above going off herself and doing whatever she needs to do, which I quite liked. I think at the end, she saw in the doctor what she wanted to see. And given that Tegan isn't the scientist in this group.
Yeah.
Again, similar to how I would expected Nyssa to say more as a scientist on We Can Help Them. I would expected Tegan to say more as a humanitarian. We need to find a way to help them. Do you know? And I think she gave the doctor way too much credit in thanking him. Also, she's super sussy of Turlough.
Yeah.
Which I love.
even though, like, as Nyssa points out, like, you know, isn't that how you got on the TARDIS in the first place, by just walking into a strange ship?
Yeah. She got into a police box after breaking down the side of the road. He got into a weird ball. Like, there's a difference, Nyssa. Like,
actually, sorry, I just realized one thing that is not commented upon at all is that the transmat pod is also transdimensionally engineered. No one fucking comments on it whatsoever.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think this is a really strong Nyssa story. I did like her interactions with everybody. I like the fact that she's sussy as fuck of Turlough. I like the fact that she stood her ground, but she wasn't a whiny bitch like we would have seen in season one, or like in her first season. And yeah, I think at the end she saw in the doctor what she wanted to see, not what was actually there. Because that is where first season Nyssa would have called him on his bullshit and gone, like, you actually weren't going to do it, were you?
Mm-hmm.
you know, so I think she's grown in many ways and matured in many ways, but I think she still wants to believe that the doctor is her friend, which you said earlier might not necessarily be true. How about you? What do you think, Tegan, this time around?
So, first things first, if I was Tegan, pull the cord, I'm out. I'm not putting up with this guy's fucking bullshit anymore. Like, once we get back to 1983, I'm fucking tipping out the door, because you don't get to fucking berate me about stuff that I don't know about, and you constantly acting fucking highfalutin and you can't pilot your own fucking ship correctly. So no, I'm tipping out the door. Other than that, this is an incredibly strong story from Tegan. Really, really good. She's probably the smartest of the 1977 trio by the fact that when she realizes the date, she knows that they're not where they're supposed to be. So the person in the TARDIS isn't the doctor. And she retains that level of skepticism. Even when Modron's like going, oh, like you don't know about regeneration, you know, you don't know about the effects of mutation on it. And basically he's being as high standing as he possibly can and kind of, again, utilizing this quote unquote superior intelligence. But she's like refusing to be intimidated by it. So again, I thought that was great. I really enjoyed her interactions with the Brigadier. Yes, as you said, yeah, she doesn't think too much of his chauvinistic attitude towards you'll do as you're told. I suppose I can't fault her for that, because when Liz would give him like the flash of the fucking eyes and he'd still tell her to fuck off, I'd be like, Brig, no, you're in the wrong on this one. But this is like, who's it almost like? Because I'm just trying to like work out the arc, because she came back in Arkham Infinity and she got caught up in this whole fucking thing with Omega. But because of her past experiences with the TARDIS, she was better equipped for it. And then unfortunately we run immediately into Snake Dance, which is her Vietnam. And then we're back into this, and in a way, it's almost like a proto version of Donna, because, you know, the way Donna has her first interaction with the Doctor, and then she wants to better herself, so she starts actually becoming like this investigator into strange occurrences type thing. So here we have Tegan that is more worldly, less like, I've seen that there's somebody outside of the box that I was in, and I want to embrace it a bit more. So I love seeing that evolution in her, that character growth. And now that, in a sense, like, it kind of reminds me of, you know, when like you do, when you play, when you're doing an RP, and a person rolls a new character, and that new character gets shoehorned into the group somehow. And you're like, cool, I'm not immediately going to fucking trust you at all. I think I'm going to be sus of you the entire fucking time. So I like that she's kind of like that with Turlo.
Such as a character being created who has nothing to do with the original cast, but for some reason thinks they should wield the blade of their fallen friend.
Yep.
For no
absolutely
fucking reason.
Not happening. Not happening whatsoever.
I'm wondering if she'll be browbeaten into liking him.
I don't know, because as you pointed out, with the Black Guardian, he's in the next two stories. So whether she's browbeaten or he does a, you know, like almost like a Smeagol, you know, like, I'm not actually that bad, and then becomes Gollum again. Who knows? We'll just have to wait and see. But I think this, for me anyway, is on the shortlist for best performances for her rambling down the line.
I agree. No, I definitely agree. Definitely agree with you on that one. It's always nice when we sort of have a story that's where we're like, ooh, add that to the list.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's better if when like they are, it's better when like it's like, you know, story after story after story, because you're like, I have so much choice, as opposed to I'm scrambling around for pickings here.
Shall we go on to the man, the myth, the legend?
Yes, the man, the myth, the legend, the mustache.
The mustache. Okay, you posed a very important question to me on Slack the other day. Was it mm-hmm. Slack? Was it in person? Was it on whatever? You posed a very important question.
It was on GChat.
Okay, very good. Mustache? No mustache.
Mm.
Nicholas, you're a cutie, but grow a fucking mustache. He looks, because it's actually so interesting that, like, because they have him without the mustache, which is like sacrilege, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's the same Nicholas Courtney, they didn't film the episode over 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
1983 Brigadier looks so much older. The way Nick carries himself,
mm-hmm.
the way they dress him, because he's not wearing military, he's wearing clothes that he'll actually become quite comfortable in later on.
Yeah,
but like, you can tell they're from two different times.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? As opposed to a lot of times, like in TV shows, you're like, oh my god, they're from two different times, and they literally look exactly the fucking same.
Yeah.
But it's very obvious. So I was delighted to see the brig again. I had seen one or two clips from the story before. In like looking back on the Brigadier type videos and like fan videos about the Brigadier. The scene where the Doctor rejogs his memory. Mm-hmm. I've seen that before. I didn't see it with any sound though, but I saw it like visually. And I really like the Brigadier in this. I like seeing him away from UNIT, but still being the same, like, discipline and whatever, and weird shit is happening, and I should accept it by now, but for some reason I fucking don't, because I have a tiny military brain. Like, you need to fit in my box, or else I need to see that there is, like, you can't just tell me what's happening inside the box without giving me, like, a window so I can actually see it myself. Because otherwise I won't believe you. But I just love him in this. He's so cute. There's a couple of, like, plot holes I don't quite understand. The main one being, what the fuck happened to his memory?
Because
they don't actually explain why, in 1983, he doesn't remember the Doctor. That is never explained.
Mm-hmm.
Because originally I thought it was going to be at the end of the episode, the Doctor would wipe his memory. Because the older Brigadier didn't remember. But it's also hinted at that whatever happened to his memory is the cause of his mental breakdowns. Mm-hmm. It is a whole subplot here of like, because he gets really defensive and belligerent when the Doctor's kind of implying there's something wrong with his memory. Like, he loses the fucking plot, which is so unusual for the Brig. And so, like, I was waiting for someone to explain that, like, again, similar to Donna in future episodes, that, like, knowing or coming into contact with himself fucked with his brain. But no one actually says that. And I'm like, he sees the TARDIS leave at the end. He spoke, like, and he was totally fine with that. Like, what? Like, that's the bit that I can't get my head around, because him remembering is an amazing scene. It's fantastic. Strongly recommend it. Even if you don't like the sound of the rest of the story, look up that scene, because it's very, very good. And the flashbacks.
It does start up. It does start out like a Calvin Klein commercial, you know, Joe Grant, Sarah Jane.
Yeah. But it's so good, though. Really. Like, do you know what I mean? I really get what Peter Greenwood was going for when he wrote it. And when you have these, you know, outbursts of, you're, again, you're sort of thinking, like, Did they think that he had Alzheimer's or something? Do you know, in the way that he's reacting to things, like, has he forgotten things before and whatever? So yeah, the whole thing about his memory loss, I'm like, that's never explained. Because it's hinted at that, like, the doctor suggesting that maybe Turlough did it, or maybe Mordrin did it. Who did it? We don't know. The one thing about the flashbacks that I loved the flashbacks, because you get to see his view of all the different doctors, which is great. What I don't like is what triggered his memory wasn't the Yeti and it wasn't the doctor himself. It was Liz Shaw, Joe Grant, Sarah Jane. They're the ones who triggered his memory, which is very, very sweet, by the way. But they don't appear in the flashbacks. All he sees is the doctor's faces, not the women in question that sparked. So I took personal issue with that. But generally speaking, for the rest of the story, it was just great to see. It's great to see the Brigadier in a different setting. There's something I'll touch on in a second that pertains to the Brigadier, but it's also about the story as a whole. But I loved his interactions with Nyssa and Tegan. Because again, flashing back to the invasion, you know, flashing back to all the times he tried to control Sarah Jane and failed. You know, I love his own like natural curiosity. Like, there's a bit in, I think it's episode 3 or episode 4, when he's in the pod and they're like, oh no, because it was Mordrin was like, oh no, fuck off, you need to get off this fucking shit. Go in there, fucking leave. No, we're not going to hurt you, you're fine, just fuck off. Which is hilariously funny. But he's in this, again, trans-dimensional thing, making no comment. He has no fucking clue how any of this works. Right? But we get a little bit of an inkling that Trish is artificially creating in her head, because it's not within him this time, but I can play wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey shit with Doctor Who. We get a little bit of an inkling of the sort of science leads lesson that future iterations of UNIT and his family do, in the sense that he recognizes the importance of the tracking device. And he's like, cool, how the fuck do I get that? Because with that, this can't go where it needs to go, and I can go find the TARDIS. I'm like, look at you. And like, the minute he figured out how to get it out, he looked like so happy with himself. I'm like, oh, Petal, you tried so hard. But yeah, the thing I was going to touch on, and I don't have experience with this, I think you perhaps have a bit more experience with this than I do. When watching this story in the modern day, there are several mentions of beatings and corporal punishment.
Yep.
Which is weird to hear, particularly if you grew up in a time and in an area where that did not happen.
Yeah, so I suppose just for people, Trish and I were the same age. We grew up 90 kilometers apart, thereabouts. She went to a school where there was no corporal punishment. I went to a school where there was. So if we acted out, or the teacher thought that we were misbehaving or whatever, we were hit either with a ruler, with a meter stick, get a slap on the wrists with a hand. So yeah.
Yeah. Contrary to me, growing up, I said 90 minutes away, if you got in trouble, you were literally sent out the back to clap the erasers. That was literally something I had to do. No.
We had a teacher in secondary school who, so like, this is when we were teenagers, his preferred punishment was to get two Bic biros, so the hexagonal type biros, put them on the ground and get the misbehaving student to kneel on them for half the class.
Yeah. Kerry was a bit slow on the old...
No. Because in other places in Kerry, that shit wasn't allowed. Okay. I grew up in...
But yeah. So as well as sort of having to... Paddy and I never forgive the Brigadier for his chauvinistic ways, by the way.
Oh no, Jesus.
It's wrong, and we've called it out as wrong. However, at this point, it's built into his character, and so we don't tend to give out about it every time it crops up. This type of corporal punishment and him being part of that system is also just something that was true of the time, which is unfortunate. But if you really love the Brigadier and you're watching this, you just need to be aware that he is a part of that system. You know? And particularly in his role in the school, as he's the maths teacher and he was the head of the sort of military prep program that they had, he did likely participate in that.
Yeah, and he was, and I think he was the rugby coach as well.
Yeah, so just warning to keep that in mind. But I've been rambling for ages because I love him and I love seeing him again. And he needs to keep his beard because otherwise his face is wrong.
His mustache.
His mustache, yeah. I said beard because I was looking at you. He needs to keep his mustache because otherwise his face is wrong.
Yeah.
Go on.
something that you've also said about me. So there's one. So I'll get the negative out of the way with first, and it just rubs me up the wrong way. Is when the Brigadier and Hippo, sorry, or when Ibbotson, I don't know how they call him Hippo. Maybe he's got a kind of a bit of a square head. I don't know, but when they get up to the top of the obelisk, Hippo's he's puffed out because he's after running down the fucking thing and leading the Brigadier. No, he went up it, ran down it, then led the Brigadier back up. And he's puffed out. And the Brigadier just basically says, if your body wasn't so disgusting, you'd be a bit healthier. I'm like, this kid is 17 at max. He's between 16 and 17. And like, I'm chalking it up to the quote unquote, like, you know, nervous exhaustion from the mental block. But like, I can't imagine the Brigadier having a go at a fucking 17-year-old kid's body shape. I know like that.
But particularly 1983 Brigadier, who had let himself go just a tad.
Yeah, but that's the hypocrisy of the older generation.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on the Hippo thing. My reasoning for that is he's been in this system now for 6 years. And he has conformed and become a bit of an elitist prick.
Yeah. But outside of that aspect of it, which we've said is a product of that time and that environment, and a part of me wants to headcanon it, is that it's a slight personality change because of that fucking trauma that he went through. It's great seeing the Brigadier back again, because there's so many great Brigadierisms as we have here. Like, you know, when he says that he's a maths teacher, the Doctor raises the eyebrow and he goes like, oh, I know how many beans make 5, Doctor. You don't need to be a Time Lord to have like A-level maths. And it's like, fucking true, you know? And then there's the whole thing, like, he goes like, this is the third time I've tricked up that wretched hill, and the moral blackmail side of things. But what I thought was brilliant was that we got to see every facet of the Brigadier, but split across the two selves. So the ingenuity and the military-esque demeanor was in the younger version. You know, it's like time for a recce and he goes exploring the ship and, you know, he takes out his penknife to try and pick the electronic lock of the room and ends up just pushing a button.
Still, though, yeah. He tried.
Oh, yeah, no, like, no, but it's like that military man aspect of it. And then, as you said, like, you're the great, looking so chuffed with himself when he took the beacon out. So, like, we got to see that. But then it's like the... Do you remember, I think, was it Robot, where he said that he was an old codger stuck in his ways, and Sarah Jane says, no, nonsense, you're a swinger. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the Brigadier. This is the Brigadier, which is like, you know, I'm an old man, but I'm still kind of, I'm still me type thing.
Mm-hmm.
We had, and with the softer character moments, we had that in the later side of things. But it was great because... What is it, like six? No, it's longer. Yeah, no, I suppose it is 6 years since we last saw him in Terror of the Zygons. Or is it longer? Sorry. Because that would have been longer. Started. Yeah, 7, 6. Jesus, it's nearly 8 years.
Mm.
He hasn't missed a beat.
Mm.
Like, it's still great to see, and I absolutely love him with Tegan, because you always get the impression of, like, you know, if Doris wasn't on the scene and I was 20 years younger type thing.
Where's Doris?
I don't know. Maybe she's mad at him for going out of retirement. And actually, that was, it's a there was one aspect of the story that I thought was actually kind of dark, and I'm just looking up the sequence here, which is, yeah, he said, when the doctor asks, when did you leave unit? He goes, 7 years ago. And of course, I could have retired on the army pension, grown vegetable marrows, and died of boredom in a year. And it's like, that's kind of fucking dark, because, like, you and I know people that when they retire, they can't stay retired. They have itchy feet. They always have to be doing something. So they take on like a part-time job or something like that just to keep themselves ticking over. For the Brigadier, that was a very dark thing to say. I just kind of get glossed over a bit.
Hmm.
But no, like, it was, I really enjoyed having him back because he had good character moments, as I said, which, especially with Tegan, although it was nice to see him with Nyssa as well. Him and the Doctor, the dynamic was, it was good, because you get kind of Peter's Doctor is almost like, you old rascal, you haven't changed a bit. But the one thing that did confuse me was the whole Brigadier being like so hush-hush surrounding UNIT. I'm like, UNIT were in charge of security for an international peace conference at one point. Like, UNIT is a very well-known entity, so why is it this big public fucking, or in Official Secrets Act nonsense that you're talking about?
I imagine because the day-to-day work they did was protected, yeah, by the Official Secrets Act.
Yeah. Like, but the way he treats UNIT as a whole entity is like, you can't possibly know about UNIT.
Mm.
But yeah. Also, it was good seeing him back. I'm looking forward to seeing him again soon. Yeah, no. That's it. That's pretty much all my thoughts on the Brigadier.
Okay. Yeah. So many unanswered questions, though. Where is Doris? Benton! We totally forgot to mention a Benton!
Oh, I know. And selling secondhand cars. I wanted so much more for him.
No. Do you know what I'm... like? And this is my thing, right? Where... I think this story was telling one story originally and then it changed track. Mm. I'll discuss this when we get to the overall. But the Brig retiring, his mental breakdown, his taking the job to school, Benton going off and doing something else. I'm like, that's a different result of Mordrin,
mm-hmm,
than what we saw. Like, the story is, like, the story in my head would be, it's kind of giving away a bit much about my thoughts in the overall, but that 1977 Brigadier is part 2 of a 3 Brigadier arc. 1983 Brigadier is part 3. There's a part 1 Brigadier before he retires that I thought was going to be that something happened to, like, flashback to that caused his retirement and Benton to go off and things to go to shit. Sort of like a turn left moment.
Yeah.
That was going to sort of cascade backwards from this, but that wasn't it. So lots of that will go into my overall, because my overall is going to be.
So, moving on to prominent characters, of which we only have one. We have Turlough. No first name yet.
Oh, Turlough.
Mm-hmm.
I knew a bit about the Turlough character going into the story. I knew he started off trying to kill the Doctor. And I knew that he stayed. That was literally it. I think the only thing I've seen him in as a character is possibly, I think.
Mm-hmm. He isn't the Five Doctors.
Yeah. So I found him really interesting. Because if you imagine, he has this whole thing where he's clearly not from Earth or not from this time period. But, like, why is he at some random English boarding school? What the fuck is that about? He clearly doesn't give a shit about anybody, as evidenced by throwing his friend under the bus or under the car, as it were. And I've had so many questions. But the thing I found perhaps the most interesting about him is the fact that, like, is clearly very tortured about what he's doing. Do you know? He entered the bargain in good faith. He was told, this guy is bad, and if you take care of him, or whatever. Was that being super naive? Fucking yes, a million times yes. You agree to kill somebody you don't even know. But you can tell throughout the story that, like, he tries to fight it. He's clearly very confused. And it's just like, what the hell is going on? I had assumed, like, watching the start of it, that, like, the pod and all that kind of stuff had something to do with him. Like, why he was on Earth? It didn't. And I was like, oh, okay. So I think I'm intrigued would be the way I would describe my reaction to Turlough. Is he the best character ever? No. Was this the best character introduction ever? No. Is he interesting though? Yes. There's a couple of things though where I was like, okay, I don't get the leap in logic. Like him staying, first of all. Okay. But there's a few other things where, like, he just made decisions and I'm like, I don't get it. But, like, you know. Overall, I think intrigued is the word I'm going to go with in regards to Turlough. Because he was a prominent character and not really a driving character, other than his repeated attempts to kill the Doctor. In a little bit of a fucking Wile E. Coyote and fucking Roadrunner, to be honest.
Well, also, to be fair, don't forget at the start he was literally a driving character.
Yes. Aren't you hilarious?
I am. I'm so witty.
But yeah, I think a lot of my thoughts on Turlough actually are more connected to the Black Guardian. So I'll probably circle back around to Turlough a little bit when we talk about the Black Guardian. But what did you think of him?
So even before we get to the whole Black Guardian thing, he's an asshole. Just on the initial presentation, he is an asshole, and I don't think anyone can deny it, because he constantly bullies Hippo Ibbotson. Obviously, I don't know why they call him Hippo.
I presume it's just a plan.
He's got a big square head. Possibly. But and then it's like, you know, he sets him up to take the fall, and he lies through his teeth about everything. It's like, And I think the fact that when you find out that he's actually an alien, it's like, okay, he's just bored and he's stirring shit just for his own form of entertainment. I would say that he's self-serving because he's willing to use anyone and anything to try and get him off Earth and back to his own planet. Now, again, because we don't know the backstory as to why he's on Earth, that might come back to be a comment that I like or a statement I'll retract. But just at the moment, he seems to be kind of very self-serving in that regards of like, get me home. I do agree that he is very naive at the start, because looking at the Black Guardian and it's like, you know, you must have eaten someone, you know, of the greatest evil, and I'm like, you're worried, look at the cut of you, and you're saying someone that's inherently evil. But yeah, so no, there is the naivety there, and again, as the more he learns about the Doctor, the less he wants to go through with it. So I don't think, while yeah, he's a bully and a selfish person, I don't think he's outright evil. Or so I, like you, I'm curious to see and essentially revisit his arc now, because there's a huge asterisk beside everything that he has done and will do going forward, as long as it involves the Black Guardian.
Yeah, and like, I think like with the whole selfish thing, because I agree with you that he is very self-serving. The caveat I'd put on that is, wouldn't anybody in his situation be? Do you know? Which is where, to your point, learning more about his backstory is going to paint that picture with much broader strokes.
No, absolutely. But I think maybe some of that is coloured by his, I would say, his cruel streak, in the sense of like pulling pranks solely to get someone else to take the fall.
I mean, like the way he's Ibbotson is just shit. Like that's unforgivable. Yeah. But like beyond that, I think anyone else in his position would probably do the same. Mm-hmm. Do you know? Yeah. No, we don't know the full extent of what his position is, so.
Yeah,
there is also that part.
Also, God love him, Mark Strickson can't. I know that he was in his early 20s. He can't pull off being a teenage boy. Like he really can't. It looks almost like he's a panto character.
Yeah, although the one thing I will say about that is that, like, so traditionally in Hollywood, and you know, especially in like the 70s and 80s, you know, when you had like the Breakfast Club and all those, none of those people were teenagers. None of them.
No.
Or like if they were teenagers, they were like 18. But I think something that, I've seen a lot of videos online about is like how people nowadays are aging more gracefully. So there are certain actors who are in their late 20s who, to you and I, could still pass in a film or something. Like, it wouldn't be completely mind-blowing if they played an 18-year-old. Because, like, it's like the thing of, like, you know, Peter Capaldi is older than William Hartnell was. As a species, we're aging differently. Do you know what I mean? A lot of that has to do with people not smoking fucking all day, every day. So, like, I think that's part of it, though, in the sense that, like, you know, what a 28-year-old looked like in the early 80s, they'd say, oh, he looks like a teenager, and now we're like, no, he looks 40.
But it's like, yeah, like, because, like, Andrew Garfield, I think he was, like, 27 when he did his first Spider-Man movie, and he looked younger than Tobey Maguire did when Tobey Maguire did his at like who I think was 25 when he did his ones. So yeah, it's a strange one. But like, as we said, like if we go back to Snake Dance, like I think Martin Clunes could definitely have pulled off being the English schoolboy character. Yeah. Mark Strickson, God love him, I don't think he just couldn't pull it
off. Although then again, he's an alien, so, you know. Maybe it's right that he couldn't pull it off.
How many years have you been kept back, Turlo?
Many. Many years.
So, we're going into the villains. And which villain would you like to do first? Mordrin or the Black Guardian?
Let's do the Black Guardian. We'll leave Mordrin, who is the titular character, till the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've obviously seen the Black Guardian before, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was watching this, I was watching his whole interaction with Turlo, and all I could think is like, okay, but that's the trickster though. Like, he comes to you in dreams or visions in a mirror, only you can see him. He gives you a little thing that you hold in your hand that allows him to communicate with you and protects you. You have to give him your agreement, which is very important. The agreement aspect is so important. I'm like, when you were doing the Sarah Jane Adventures, did you just steal the Black Guardian? Like, I now want to look up if the trickster was meant to be the Black Guardian, because it's literally a lift and shift of the character, except the Black Guardian has a face. Whereas, you know, the trickster did not. Well, he had a face, but he didn't have eyes.
He looks like a deformed smiley face waffle. Yeah.
So like that was like the first thing. I literally could not stop making the comparisons in my head as we're going through. I'm just like, this whole like, you know, do I have your agreement? And you know, until the agreement is passed or whatever. And you know, we will probably get to it eventually. You know, discussing the spin-offs and the Sarah Jane Adventures, but I'm just there going, this is like almost like it's actually the difference between the trickster and the Black Guardian is, so in the episode Whatever Happened to Sarah Jane, which is fantastic. It is a fantastic Doctor Who story. It's in the Sarah Jane Adventures, but like it is like one of my favorite stories ever. We have a similar thing of an agreement being made and our titular character being taken out of whatever. The difference between the Black Guardian and the Trickster is that the Black Guardian actually makes you do the dirty work. The trickster asks for your agreement, and then things change around you, but you know what the change was. Whereas the Black Guardian is much more of an asshole, because he's just like, no, kill him. Do you know? Also, like, for a somewhat omnipotent being, like, I know Turlo was kind of giving him the runaround at certain points, but also, like, he was giving out to Turlo for things that Turlo literally had no control over. Which is like, how the fuck was Turlo meant to know there was going to be two brigadiers walking around? Like, that's not his fault. He wasn't fucking there. But yeah, so I'm curious to see how the Black Guardian plot is going to continue. Because it's been a while since we've had the character. I do think the character was interesting. I think I'm looking forward to the continuation of this story point. But yeah, like a guy who can, because this is the other thing. It's like at one point he's talking to Turlo and he is the headmaster. And then you realize it's a dream. But like at one point that become a dream. Has this whole conversation been a dream? Is Turlo just legitimately dreaming about his headmaster coming to him saying you're not in trouble? And then the guy invaded the dream? Or did the guy play act in Turlo's dream being the actual headmaster and having an actual proper fucking conversation for like a minute and a half?
Yeah, the way I read it was that he invaded Turlo's dream, pretended to be the headmaster, and then it was like, you know, fooled you.
Okay, you were nattering away as the headmaster for like two fucking minutes. but yeah, I think the Black Guardian is interesting. So obviously, I don't know anything about the remaining Black Guardian stories. But something I actually would almost prefer, you can tell me if you agree, I kind of don't want the Doctor to meet him. Because if you think about, like, again, I'm probably thinking of the Trickster from the Star Trek Adventures. The Doctor rarely ever interacted directly with the Trickster. There was, like, one episode where they had, like, a three-minute or 3-second, like, on-screen thing. I think they literally said, like, two lines to each other in the entire story. But I quite liked that. In the sense that, like, because the Black Guardian is trying to get at the Doctor through now his companions in the form of Turlough, I kind of want this to be Turlough's story. Do you know?
Mm.
If that makes any sense. Like, I don't want it to be...
No, it does.
Know,
it does.
Say, next week, Turlough has a, you know, an interaction or whatever, and the Doctor realizes it's the Black Guardian, and suddenly we don't see Turlough interacting with the Black Guardian anymore. Like, I want to see Turlough have a full arc with it, and not just be the introduction of it, and then it gets dropped. But I don't know what the next two stories are like, so I don't know how that plays out.
Yeah, no, I fully get where you're coming from, and honestly, I cannot remember. Everything now up until Sylvester's last season is just a fog, like, really, like, in terms of plot, and I know the story beats, like, or as I know, like, fragments, but everything else is just a haze. So for me, firstly, what the Black Guardian is, look, I know it's the 80s, but that punk rock hairdo / dead crow on your head, it's not working. He literally has a dead crow on his head. I have a serious question, though. Why can't the Black Guardian harm the Doctor directly? Like, he said at one point, I can't be seen to act. But that wasn't an issue when you were chasing him all over creation and not finding him because the Doctor had the randomizer on. And then there's the thing of, okay, telling Turlough to stop the two brigadiers from connecting, otherwise I'll kill you all. Is that not acting directly? Also, if the two brigadiers meeting is as cataclysmic as it's going to, as you're making it out to be, doesn't that take care of the problem of the Doctor? I'm very confused as to, like, are you just perpetually angry?
So, this is the interesting dynamic that I think is a big parallel to the Trickster. In the Key to Time series, like, arc.
Yeah.
The Black Guardian is chasing the Doctor because he wants the Key to Time. Not because he wants necessarily to kill the Doctor.
Oh no, but like afterwards, at the end of that arc. Because they installed the randomizer so that the Black Guardian can't follow them.
So I think there's some sort of higher entity that's like, you cannot, you know, the Doctor is so ingrained across time, you don't get to fucking fuck with him directly. Like, no, you don't get to interact with him. But there's a loophole where you can get other people to fucking do your dirty work for you. Do you know? So again, if you think of the Trickster in Star Trek Adventures and in Doctor Who, like, the Trickster was mentioned in Doctor Who in Turn Left.
Yeah, this is one of the Trickster's brigades.
Right. We see the Trickster in Star Trek Adventures, but, and he's actually more of a Sarah Jane villain. But he can interact directly with, just like, okay, huge spoilers for Sarah Jane. To get rid of Sarah Jane, he has her childhood friend make a pact with him. To get rid of Sarah Jane, he lures her into the past to change history. But he doesn't interact with her directly. And then he sets her up with Peter Dalton. But again, other than when the Doctor interfered in that particular story, he doesn't ever really, he doesn't get to change her timeline or pluck her out of time directly. He has to do it through other people. Do you know? And similarly, like in Doctor Who itself, so in Turn Left, the world goes to shit because the Doctor's gone. But the Trickster didn't remove the Doctor, the Trickster removed Donna from that. So it's like, he can't go after him directly, but you can make ripples by going after other people. The difference with the Black Guardian is that he's much more direct with it. It's like, no, fucking kill him. You know what I mean? It's not like he's moving people that's going to have it. It's a bit more direct. But that's, you know, there's something in the back of my mind where there is actually like some sort of pact between the Black Guardian and the White Guardian, or the Black Guardian and, you know, the Time Lords, where it's like, you don't get to fuck with us because, or whatever. And he's just like, well, I can't fuck with you, but I can fuck with him and he can fuck with you. So, loophole. Because I'm trying to remember. I need to look it up in a timeline. I think, if I remember correctly, I do. The Sarah Jane Adventures episode that introduced the Trickster came before the Doctor Who episode that had the Trickster's Brigade.
Yeah.
Because in the Sarah Jane Adventures episode, and I know I've got on a tangent, but hello, welcome. The Trickster says, you know, I want to get to know more about you. And this man called the Doctor. Imagine a universe without the Doctor. So it was actually Sarah Jane that gave the Trickster the idea of, like, that introduced the Doctor to the Trickster. But again, the Trickster can't just pluck the Doctor out of time. He doesn't have that power, but he can make a deal. Mm-hmm. He can manipulate other people to do something.
Because was, oh, the Wedding of Sarah Jane Smith, that's season 3? Yeah, so, and that ties into David's series of, what is it, final specials. So season 2 would have been on his last season. So season 1, which introduces the Trickster, would have been just after Martha's season.
Yeah.
Or in around the same time as Martha's season. Yeah. So if you're watching all the spin-offs, you're introduced to the concept of the Trickster ahead of time. But yeah, no, it's just like, but certain things, like, again, it's just very contradictory stuff here by the Black Guardian. Like, if you don't obey me, I'll kill you all. That's interfering directly. And then it's blaming Turlough for having the two Brigadiers on board. And it's like, surely they're going to solve the problem for you. So, like, the Black Guardian for me comes across as more of a pain in the hole than an intimidating character in this story. Yeah.
But I do wonder then, like, how much does the Black Guardian see? So, like, I think his whole thing of, like, you do this or I'll kill you all, I think that's just him just threatening Turlough. I don't think he can actually do anything. I think his whole thing with the two Brigadiers is that, like, he knows what could happen if the two Brigadiers touch. Which is the whole Blitch, what the fuck is it called? Whatever, there's a whole, like,
oh, the Blinovich limitation effect.
But my read of that is he knows that if the two Brigadiers touch at the right time, then it solves the problem that the Doctor is facing. Whereas he's like,
yeah,
he's like, I think the Black Guardian has a more advanced view of time. So, like, he knows, like, shit, there's two of them. And then, like, once that's been made and he's aware of that, he can sort of see the outcome of that, which is, ah, fuck, not only does this make it harder for Turlough to kill the Doctor because there are two Brigadiers that he has to work around, but Mordrin isn't going to fucking kill him either. God damn it.
Yeah, that's a fair call out. That's a fair call out. And it would make sense, all right. Although, like, I will say, like, I couldn't, again, another reason I couldn't take him seriously is because when Turlough says, like, but the Doctor's not evil, and he, Black Guardian essentially goes, like, his good is my evil, because I am the Black Guardian. It reminded me of an episode of Earthworm Jim, where, like, Earthworm Jim's, like, dark, like, a dark version of him comes out. He goes, what you love, I hate. What you hate, I love. For instance, you know when you brush your teeth, and then you have a glass of orange juice afterwards? And Jim goes, oh, I hate that. He goes, I know, I love it. And that just did that. That was in my head for the rest of us. So I think that had an impact on my taking the Black Guardian seriously.
And I now have the Earthworm Jim theme tune stuck in my head. Thanks very much.
Yep. Also, I never realized that Peter Puppy's whole thing of whenever he starts to panic, you know, if fear is the mind killer, fear is the little death that brings total oblivion. I never realized that was from Dune. God, that show was so good. Cool. So moving on to Professor Monkey for head. Sorry, I mean Modron.
Modron. Modron is fucking hell. He's so fucking weird.
Like, one thing that are you meant to feel sorry for him? That was what was going through my head towards the, this was the latter half of the.
Yeah, because this story is the thing. Because I do feel sorry for them. Do you know? And I think we're meant to. I think we're meant to be conflicted on it. Which is why the Doctor's reaction to the whole thing is so bizarre. And we're like, you're not going to offer to help. But, like, he's also an asshole. Like, he deliberately impersonated the Doctor. Like, 110%. Leading fucking Tegan and Lissa around like there was no tomorrow, and the Brigadier, and it's like, just ask for help, dude. Just ask, like, what did tricking them into bringing the TARDIS to the ship, what benefit did that have when you still need a Time Lord to do the whole regenerations thing? It's like, it was a stupid fucking plan. How about just tell them my people are dying and regenerating and dying and regenerating over and over and over in this perpetual torment? If he just told them that from the beginning, when he eventually presents his thing of like, oh, the Doctor has to give up his regenerations, he'll no longer be a Time Lord. A, don't be so fucking happy with that. You don't even know him. Like, come on, don't be a dick. But also, it would have made Nyssa and Tegan more likely to do what we wanted them to do. So we were saying, we were talking about Nyssa and Tegan, that, like, why weren't they fighting back against the Doctor and being like, you know, we have to do something to help them, or blah, blah, blah. So I think the reason is because Nyssa and Tegan, all they know is this guy's a fucking liar. Who made, well, particularly in Nyssa's part, made a fucking fool out of her. So, like, it's weird. Like, I feel bad, but at the same time, I'm like, dude, not the way to get the results you want. I was like, oh yeah, oh, he'll come back. Why will he come back? He'll come back because I've now poisoned his friends. So he'll come back, because if he won't give up his regenerations for us, he'll give them up for them. And I'm like, okay, you're a prick. And all of the sorrow I'm feeling for you is going away. I feel sorry for the other people. They've done nothing wrong, bar steel technology from the Time Lords a very long time ago. But, like, in this story, they've done nothing wrong. I feel bad for them. That you're the fucker whose turn it was to go down to a planet and try and find help, and you decided to poison other people in an attempt to have your own death, as opposed to maybe asking for help.
Yeah. No, because that was my whole thing, is like, the other seven Modronites, I do feel sorry for, because I get the impression that they were convinced by Modron to take part in the scheme. But Modron himself is he's the architect of his own demise, because he steals the technology from Gallifrey without a proper understanding of how to work it or what pitfalls or anything could entail. And then he dooms his colleagues to this pain, perpetual existence. As you said, he deliberately infects Nyssa and Tegan in order to manipulate the Doctor into sacrificing himself. So yeah, I could be he's a complete prick.
Although, never asks the Doctor. Like, if you imagine future iterations of the Doctor, and even past iterations of the Doctor, more so future iterations, let's be honest. Had someone come to them and said, I need your help, but the only way for you to help me is to give me your regenerations. A plea for help is more likely to get help than lying, kidnapping, guilt tripping, and whatever, and threatening. Like, the fact that he was threatening him the whole time and be like, we need your regenerations. I'm like, stop with the mahaha part. Just explain the fucking situation.
No muhahas.
No. No. And the Black Guardian as well is a very muhahaha type person. No. Nothing. But yeah, it's like, I feel bad for his people. I don't feel bad for him because he's a dickhead.
Yeah, no, I complete agreement with you on that one.
The one thing I don't know if you... Was he the one who stole the technology, or did they all steal it?
See, this is where there's, I suppose, the reservation about giving all of them full sympathy, because it's never expressly said who did it. But because he seems to be the one that's calling an awful lot of the shots,
I get the impression
that... even though it was his turn, I still think it's less of a committee and more of a, I'm the one running the show here. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he was Davros-esque in his whole, you know, we, the greatest and brightest scientific minds, deserve this level of technology and I shall procure it, and brings it back and fucks them all over type thing. So... Yeah, as I said, it's very grey as to whether or not they're all in on it, but just from the way that he carries on, and as I said, he's kind of calling the shots even once they're all woken up. It's not a committee. He seems to be the one running it. So I would give them the benefit of the doubt and my sympathy. Him, no, I wouldn't. But also because of recent conversations that I've had with some friends, just, you know, imagining the Doctor taking the Brigadier and leaving Tegan and Nyssa, and the Brigadier confronting him, and like the Doctor having his like Sisko in the pale moonlight moment, you know, is it because I can live with it? I can live with it. And then they just, yeah. I knew we would get that reaction out of you, but I was just like talking to, like, a friend of mine wanted to know, like, what are some really good episodes of Deep Space Nine? And I told him the ones that always come to my mind are, I can never remember the name of it, but the episode where they keep activating the fail safes on the station, and it tries to kill them. Way of the Warrior, by both parts. Far Beyond the Stars. In the Pale Moonlight, Take Me Out to the Holosuite. Those are the five episodes that always come to my mind when I think of... another friend of ours also recommended the O'Brien's in Prison episode.
Which one?
Prison.
Have thoughts on In the Pale Moonlight. This is not the podcast for that.
Yeah, no, it's not the podcast for that.
But I do have thoughts on that particular... story, yes. Just as we have thoughts here, you know, we discussed when we talked about the Doctor a while ago. I think as a villain, though, just going back to Modron, I think as a villain, he's certainly fucking interesting. Like, the aesthetic was really interesting.
Mm. Yeah. No, really. Like, because you keep he's never boring. The questions keep coming along as each stage of this rebirth and death keeps happening. And he was like definitely out of the two villainous characters in the story, he was by far the more intriguing.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've reached the overall section after a lengthy but interesting discussion about the characters, which I always love. So what we do with this section of it is we will each give our final thoughts on the story and then give it an individual rating out of 5. So Trish, over to you.
So I'm going to give away a bit of a secret. When Paddy says lengthy character discussion, this discussion has been going on for the better part of 3 weeks. Due to a number of different reasons, yeah. Sickness and family issues, whatever, we had to stop halfway through, and it's been like a week and a half since. And so I've had a lot to ponder in that week and a half. That has skewed my scoring, right? It's just, it was bound to happen. I've had more time to think. So originally, I really quite enjoyed the story, do you know? And I loved having the Brigadier back. I loved Tegan stepping up again. You know, it's always good to see Tegan stepping up. I quite liked Nissa's interactions, and I don't know. Looking back, I don't know why my read of the Doctor was like, oh, we get to see he's actually not that bad in this episode, bar the bit at the end. And then you and I had our discussion, and I've spent a week and a half thinking about it. I'm like, no, he's still a prick. And actually, I think I had the Brigadier goggles on, where I'm like, it's the Brigadier, therefore it must be good. I know, impressed. There were good aspects of the story, I'm not going to lie. But now that I've taken off the Brigadier tinted glasses or whatever, I'm going to put it at 3.25.
Okay.
Because I did enjoy it when I watched it. But on reflection through our conversation, there's so many bits that I'm actually like, actually, fuck yeah, there was that bit. And fuck yeah, there was that bit. And fuck, do you know what I mean? There's so many of them. But Double Brigadier was great. Turlo, I find very intriguing. Mordrin was horrible, but that was interesting. His whole thing of pretending to be the Doctor was interesting. The whole proto-trickster idea with the Black Guardian, quite interesting. If it was a bit like mwahahaha, whatever. The bits I didn't like though was up the hill, down the hill, up the hill, down the hill, that fucking hill. I think the story kind of wandered a bit too much. Like, it could have been much tighter, allowing for more focus where it needed to be. And yeah, the Doctor's a prick. Like, I tried so hard. Like, again, like, if like normal people, you listen to this episode the whole way through, you're like, oh, I thought you really liked it, but like, it did, and then I went away and I thought about it for a week and a half, and now I'm
then
like,
you spoke to me.
I spoke to you, and then I had a week and a half to think about what you said. So yeah, I'm gonna go with a 3.25. I still think that there's a lot in the story to enjoy, and if you're a fan of the Brigadier, then yes, like a million times, yes. But once you sort of take the Brigadier goggles off, you sort of see like, oh wait, issue, big red flag, fucking issue.
What was your original score? So, just out of curiosity,
originally it was a 4. The only reason it wasn't higher than a 4 originally was just because I, up the hill, down the hill, those are just a few general story things that I was like, it was really fun, but like I wouldn't have been going back and rewatching it 50 million times over. And I didn't like the doctor's attitude at the end, which that's a big chunk of this is the doctor's attitude at the end. This whole thing of like, I won't give up my regenerations and like, fuck it, I'm just gonna leave mine. That was a big piece of it. And then a couple of like nitpicky plot holy bits. But then I had time to think about it, and suddenly I realized that actually, no, I was just looking at the doctor through like brigadier goggles, and I was like, oh no. But how about you?
So I've kind of done a small bit of the reverse. I had it much lower initially, but I think, you see, this is one of the good things about the conversations that we have is we can clear up plot points or like where we think there are plot holes for each other, because like we'll, like for example, now talked about the Doctor and Tegan at the start, and I kind of said like I thought it was kind of he was patronizing her as opposed to anything else. And then like just in the conversation that we had there, like some of the stuff I had around the Black Guardian and Turlough, it was like there are aspects of it where it's like, okay, it's always fun to let the audience let their brains work and try and kind of figure stuff out. But at the same time, if you've got things that are kind of glaringly inconsistent, you do need to have a conversation with her by someone where she's like, am I crazy or is this what's going on here, you know? So I did a bit of an inverse, but I'll go through the stuff that I liked and the stuff that I didn't like, and then I'll tell you my final score. So I think the core plot of the story is very interesting. I think the whole thing with Modron and the two brigadiers, the two different time zones, how them, especially the way that the brigadier in the future is in real time remembering the stuff that his past self is doing with Tegan and Nyssa, and that's kind of, it's like a weird, oh, what's the word, premonition type thing. So I thought that was good. I loved the Brig and Tegan together. I thought had a really good dynamic. Even though like they're at odds sometimes in it, I still think they've got great chemistry. Tegan, as I said, this is on a short list for being one of her best stories in The Rambling. Because I thought she had just so much, she was so strong here. Turlough will definitely be interesting to follow. Absolutely. Like as I said, he's kind of, we've talked about the negative aspects of his character, but definitely him going forward will be interesting. And as I put it here, I can't wait to see how he vaders the Black Guardian. But the stuff that I didn't like on the, as I said, the negative side of things was, as I said earlier, Jesus Christ, will someone just ask him a question that only the Doctor would know? It's that fucking simple. There's Treevy there with a lengthy repertoire of experiences with the Doctor. Just ask him a question, each of me. It's not that fucking hard. Also, the Doctor being an asshole, it's like it actively hampers the enjoyment of a story when you know that he's going to be like this. And I'm all for the Doctor having his moments, his snappish moments, because it can help sell the intensity of like we went back and forth about the Doctor snapping at Sarah Jane and Pyramids of Mars. For me, it kind of like adds to the intensity of what's going on, that type of scenario. So where it warrants, yeah, him being an asshole is okay. Well, not okay, but it's understandable. But here it's just like everything, nothing is good enough for you. It really fucking bothers me. And also the lack of Nyssa, the lack of use of Nyssa. She's just there to parrot or a bit of an exposition dump. So that's frustrating in of itself. So I had initially had it down as a, sorry, I had initially down as it as 2.5, but I've raised it up to a 3 solely because the stuff that you said surrounding my worries about the Black Guardian and Turlo make sense.
Cool. So, not bad, not great. I think, I mean, I certainly, you know, on initial viewing, obviously didn't, wasn't impacted as much by some things that on reflection I actually don't like. Do you know what I mean? So I think there is a lot in the story for people to love if they want to.
Yeah. No, no, oh, yeah, no, there is.
If you're a
Keegan
fan, if you're a Brigadier fan, there's a lot here for you on that. But that brings us to the end of this week's episode. So just for those who are tracking the averages, this season is currently on 3.17 for you and 3.42 for me, which automatically has it higher than last season. And the season before. And the season before that. So we'll see. We'll see, like, can it stay consistently, like, at the moment, just stay above three, like, for both of us. Like, just stay consistently above a three for both of us. Mm-hmm. That'd be great.
Yeah.
But yeah. But next week, we'll be back with another episode, and this one is going to be Terminus.
Yes.
I know nothing about it.
So, we'll see what's waiting for us at the end of that line. But yes. We're here all the time.
All except the for time. We're not. We take a week and a half
exactly.
to finish something.
Thank you for following that up. I was going, come on, psychic brain.
Oh.
But until next week, guys. Bye.